right, welcome to the show this week. I'm Jake Rose.
I am DJ Ferris.
And this is our instrumental show, No Singing Allowed.
Nope, leave your singing at the door, because this is going to be all music, all bands. And I guess the distinction was, something that's more rock-based, not instrumental, so we couldn't do any, like, the Danny Elfman soundtrack stuff. Mm-hmm. I really, really wanted to do the Pee Wee Herman theme, like when he's making breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
Felt like that was, movie soundtrack. We decided not to do that. Also, Tangerine Dream would have been some good stuff to play today. But again, soundtrack-based for the most part. So, I try to pick stuff that's definitely more rock band-oriented.
Yeah, it was a good, interesting theme. It really kind of narrows down the picks here. I think that might be a good future show is movie soundtrack songs. Get a little heady and intellectual on everybody.
Yes.
But I'm a big soundtrack fan. What about singing, if there's just like percussive singing, like ooh, ta-pop-doo? like chanting,
right.
Or like percussive
some
noises
Gregorian
of the mouth.
Gregorian chants or something like that.
So
yeah.
It was like a police song, like Regatta and Blanc, that I thought about picking that had some like kind of chanting and like percussive, like kind of noises.
Wow. That's great. That sounds really good there.
Yeah.
They did
quite a few instrumental songs, and so did Sting.
Well, and the one that you're referring to with your amazing sound effects, if I may call you Bobby McFerrin, it won the Grammy for Best Instrumental, and it seems like one of your other police picks you're going to pick today also won a Grammy for Best Instrumental Rock Song.
Yeah, we'll just go ahead and just let everybody know what song we're talking about here. Stop alluding to it. It's Behind My Camel is the other police song that won a Grammy in 1980, and a lot of people think that YYZ by Rush should have won that year. Including myself, I think it's a much better instrumental song.
So there's a little bit of a tie-in here. Okay.
A little bit of a controversy what was the best instrumental song. Behind My Camel, cool song. I guess it was mostly Andy Summers just in the studio playing all the parts. I heard some YouTube comments that were like, this is just like pretty much a demo song, and YYZ is like this masterpiece. And.
Hmm.
Like, the Grammy committee wanted to pick the young, pretty artist as opposed to the old dinosaur rockers. But
was Rush a dinosaur rocker in 1980? Mm. It seemed like they were still in the height, if not just getting into the prime of their career. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they'd been around, like, about 10 years. Mm. So, I mean, okay. I don't know. That's not really that old for that time.
Right.
But
those Grammy bastards.
Well, the Grammy bastards did pick Jethro Tull over Metallica, though, so you can't really use that argument. But Behind My Camel, still a pretty good song, and Primus actually covered it in the 90s on one of their EPs where they had only cover songs. So it's got some fan support behind that song.
Okay.
So.
Well, I'm excited to hear Behind My Camel at some point today on the instrumental show. My first song was Quarter Drawing of the Dog by Susie and the Banshees. That was the B-side to Cities and Dust from 1986.
And,
good tune.
Yeah, definitely. And just can't stop thinking about if Primus had to choose between YYZ and Behind My Camel, which song would they prefer? Because they've actually covered both. What do you think?
Wait a minute now. So Primus actually covered both of those songs?
Yeah.
Wow. So what is your question, Jake?
Which one do you think they would have picked as, like, the better song to win the Grammy?
Oh. Whew. I'm going to have to say Steppin' Out by Joe Jackson. wait, between those two? Oh, okay, wait. I'll say the Rush. They would have gone with Rush.
I think they would have, too. Okay. They were huge Rush fans.
I'm glad that's solved.
That's solved. Case closed. Slam the door on that one.
Put that one to bed now. Meaning never talk about it again.
Yeah, I've been kind of on a Primus kick lately, and they did release an album last year, and thought it was a pretty good, solid album, kind of more darker, like kind of Residents-ish, but had some like cool funk bass, kind of like Bootsy Collins funk bass.
Nice.
So.
Yeah, my cousin is steadfast on that. One of the best shows that he's ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you, my cousin Mike has been to thousands of concerts. He keeps every ticket stub, and I've looked through the book before. I mean, he's seen Journey in 82 and just amazing concerts. He said Primus is the best, one of the best shows he's ever seen.
You know, like what year?
I think just in general.
Just in general.
Just they always put on just anytime an amazing show. Yeah.
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 I saw them once, 2004. Very impressed. And let's see. So I'm gonna play Behind My Camel next. What are you gonna play next?
I'm gonna go with Bass Trap from this band. I don't know if you've heard of them. U2.
Okay.
Yeah.
They're gonna say the band Bass Trap.
No.
No,
not, not Parent Trap either. Bass Trap, instrumental song off of Unforgettable Fire from 84 by U2. And yeah, I don't think U2 had that many instrumental songs, but this is definitely one of them. And it's got a good sound to it. I was digging on this song. I'm not a big later U2 fan. I sort of tune out after after the Joshua Tree, and even that album is a little bit soft for me. I like the earlier edgy U2, especially Unforgettable Fire. I think that's just an undisputed classic of the 80s for sure.
So you're saying you didn't tune into Zoo TV?
No, not Zooropa, and not Beautiful Day. If I hear a song on 103.3 Soft Rock Hits, I just am not into it most of the time.
And unless it's Hall & Oates, pretty much.
Of course.
Of course.
Mr. Hall, Mr. Oates, I will be down with them. But and did have they had an instrumental song? I figured you'd rummage up some Hall & Oates instrumental there.
Yep, they did have an instrumental song off of the album Ecstatic. Came out in 79, I believe. Oh. So wasn't able to put it on there, but okay. That's cool. I like all my picks today.
Yes. Great show today. I'm excited about the rest of our instrumental show here on 80s Obsesso.
Yeah, do you think Brian Eno had anything to do with this U2 instrumental song? Does it sound Eno-ish at all to you?
I think he supplied the coffee.
Because, the because of course, you know, the famous Bowie and Eno collaborations, especially Low and Heroes, there was the second side of those two albums was mostly instrumental. And those are pretty much like equal collaborations between Eno and Bowie. Eno, you know, supplying a lot of the synthesizers. Would have been cool to play one of those, but those all came out in the 70s as well.
What are you trying to say? You trying to say Brian Eno wrote this song for you two?
I was just wondering if you thought he was, you know, behind any part of it, since I'm not really, you know, following you two that closely.
Ah, okay.
But I do know that he produced, like, you know, the classic 80s albums that they put out.
Okay. All right. Thought you were stirring up some controversy again. Okay.
Not trying to make any trouble.
Okay. All right.
All right.
That's good to know.
Cool. So we hear the Police and you too, and we'll be back here. We'll be right back.
I will now predict the exact moment in time when every single one of you will enjoy the best tasting Coca-Cola ever. It will be the very moment that you pick up this can, because inside this can is the new taste of Coca-Cola. The best tasting Coca-Cola ever. You will taste the new taste immediately, and you will like it a lot. Now, if you're a Coke drinker, wait till you taste this one. If you're a Pepsi drinker, well, I predict we're going to be real friendly from here on in for a long, long time.
Every time folks eat Super Fruity Bonkers fruit candy, it makes a big hit. Know why Bonkers is so super fruity? It's got a chewy fruity outside with an extra fruity inside. Makes me want to eat it up.
Bonkers bonks you out.
Thumb candy!
into video games, you know, like for sure, totally. And Atari has this offer that's like so awesome, I am sure. Okay, now you can get an Atari video game cartridge free. Like totally. That's like so tubular, you know?
Buy two of these great hits, and Atari will send you any one of these great games free.
That's like so super, super nice. To the max. I'm like so sure, totally.
Buy two, get one free.
For sure.
I've been looking for a Christmas gift to tell you how much I love you.
Oh, John.
The limelight. A genuine swatch with genuine diamonds. For him, for her.
Oh, John, it's lovely.
The swatch way to say I love you this Christmas. It's a special limited edition. Get one now. Limelight by Swatch. Get one at Higbee's.
And welcome back to our 80s Obsessive Instrumental Show. Back there we had John Hommer with Crockett's Theme and Flock of Seagulls with DNA. And that Flock of Seagulls won the Grammy for a rock instrumental, I believe the same year that they won for Best New Artist. And we know John Hommer's won a few Grammys. Did he win for that song, or was it only for other songs?
I don't think he's won a Grammy in the 80s. I was looking at that Grammy list. Oh. Did he win for Miami Vice?
I think he won for Miami Vice. And he also co-write Axel F?
I don't think so.
Or am I thinking of Well, I know Harold Faltermeyer.
Yeah.
But seems like he might have been involved. I don't know. We'll check on that. Okay. Get back to you guys about that.
Well, regardless, some of the funniest videos I've ever seen on YouTube is Jan Hammer on like Solid Gold or Top of the Pops, you know, with his keyboard set up, basically lip syncing or I guess hand syncing, really. It's not lip syncing. Hand syncing to, you know, pre-recorded Miami Vice song or Crockett scene, and him just like trying to look all cool on the keyboards as he's doing his little tricks is not too cool, but funny.
Yeah, it's only cool when Rick Wakeman does it and wears a cape.
Right. And yeah, he's got to have a cape. That was actually in the comments. Like, this would be much cooler if Jan Hammer had a cape.
Right, exactly. And, yeah, I had a lot of my picks today were Grammy winners. I kind of went through the list of people that won Best Rock Instrumental at the Grammys for some of my inspiration here. And besides Flock of Seagulls and The Police, Frank Zappa won for Jazz from Hell, the title track from that album. And I think, yeah, Zappa had been around a really long time before winning that Grammy. I don't think he'd won one before that, so it might have been one of those ones where it's like, well, this guy's been around a long time, and he hasn't won a Grammy, so better give him one for something random.
Right.
But still, it's a cool song. It doesn't sound very commercial. It's pretty experimental stuff.
And it was just a few years before his death, too, right?
86, so, yep. I think he died, like, you know, within 5 years of that. So.
Okay, well.
It's a good thing he got that recognition there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, kind of underrated, I think. I mean, he gets his certain props for, you know, what he did well, which was kind of that weird, eclectic, experimental kind of stuff. But I think, you know, when the larger discussion is, you know, greatest performers or greatest rock musicians of all time, I think Zappa too often gets pushed out in place of Dylan or, you know, the Beatles or other bands.
Eric Clapton,
yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I think Zappa overall doesn't get the props that he deserves.
Yeah, and a really excellent technical guitar player, a very unique style that we'll hear here. And he had full albums of just, you know, him improvising on guitar, like the Shut Up and Play Your Guitar, like volumes 1, 2, and 3. It was kind of heady, kind of hard to get through because it's just so much music. But, yeah, just, you know, amazing display of his guitar soloing ability on that stuff.
Nice. Well, I'll do Peter Gunn by Art of Noise. They won a Grammy for this song, Best Instrumental, in the mid-80s. And, of course, this features the guitar of one of the best guitarists of all time, Duane Eddy, right?
Yep.
So this is going to be the theme for Peter Gunn by Art of Noise. And really, we could have picked a lot of stuff from Art of Noise, honestly, you know, Close to the Edit or whatever, because they were sort of one of those preeminent instrumental, pop instrumental bands of the 80s. But we'll stick with the Grammy winners here and go with Peter Gunn.
Yeah, when you said best guitarist of all time, I was afraid you were about to say Trevor Rabin of the, yes, second generation. But
oh, okay.
We'll get to that later.
You did have that look of pure fear on your face. Like you got all bug-eyed on me. So.
Say that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll get to him later, and we'll be back with a couple more here.
Thank you. back to my house.
I'll bring my guys. You have yours.
I've got Junkyard Dog.
It's World Wrestling Federation Superstars.
I've got Brutus Beefcake.
Here's Tori the Animal Steel.
I've got Great Hammer Valentine.
Ricky the Dragon Steel.
Yeah, they're so real.
And Rowdy Rod Piper.
Can you tell the difference? Wrestling Superstars, they're for real. Each sold separately from LJN.
Yeah!
We'll be right back.
All right, we're back. 80s Obsesso, our instrumental show here today. We had Duran Duran with Tiger Tiger and Art of Noise with Peter Gunn and Frank Zappa with Jazz from Hell. And last couple picks from you. Why did you choose that Duran Duran song?
Because it's instrumental.
Because it's Duran Duran.
For one thing. And it's Duran Duran. I like Duran Duran. I'm a big fan of their first couple of albums. That particular song is off their third album, Seven of the Ragged Tiger, from 1983. They also had Tel Aviv off of their first album I could have played. But I like Tiger Tiger. I think it's just a good song. It's mostly Nick Rhodes, the keyboardist, pretty much doing it all in the studio. I don't think there was a whole lot of... I think there may have been some bass in there, but... I don't know, it's just a great song, and I like how it's used in their concert video, Sing Blue Silver. It's used during kind of a montage of them on the road, putting all the stuff in semi-trucks, their gear, and watching the band in limos and jets while you see all their gear being transported across the snowy plains. And so I think they use that really well in that movie.
It's very cool. Yeah, using an instrumental song in a film sort of after it's produced. Sort of an incidental soundtrack song there. I dig it. And next week we're going to do sort of alternative college rock songs. Is that what the plan is?
Sure.
Sure?
Yes. Yeah, I know. Right. Yeah.
Glad I suggested it.
What's that?
Glad I suggested it.
Yes, you did. I like the way you're thinking. Yeah, you know, radio rock, you know, REM, the Pixies, stuff that wasn't popular on the Billboard mainstream charts, but... at the time, college radio stations across the country were playing the hell out of it. Jesus and Mary Jane, some Susie and the Banshees, perhaps, things of that nature.
Yep, and if we were still on college radio, then we would be playing that stuff, too.
Right.
But
what college station would we be on? I don't know.
I don't know. I think this is podcasting, sort of the new college radio.
I agree.
College radio can even be a little bit too saturated with the same music sometimes, I find. It's come a little bit homogenized. Just a little bit.
Right. This is like totally. Manchester University here.
Right. MU.
MU.
I think there might already be a Manchester College. I'm not sure.
Okay. That's better than FU, I guess. Yeah, preview of the alternative show. I'm going to pick one of my picks here. Is the very first modern rock song to go to number one when they created the alternative modern rock charts in 1988 was Peekaboo by Susie and the Banshees. So cool. That's going to be one of my picks.
Awesome. Had a little Susie this week. I thought you were going to say Peekaboo by Devo, but I didn't.
No.
I didn't think that would be true.
That would be a blatant lie.
Yeah. Be like, yeah, just making something up at the top of your head. But, yeah, my last pick here, another Grammy winner, Cinema by Yes. And pretty cool song. It's kind of funny that the category at the Grammys, like, it just seemed like it enabled some just kind of like moderately okay songs to win, I think, because, I mean, this song's okay. It's just kind of like atmospheric and ambient. It's not, you know, clearly not, you know, one of the best Yes songs, not even the best on that album. Mm-hmm. But it did enable some, you know, people like Yes to win a Grammy. I think that was their only Grammy ever that they won.
They've
been around since the late 60s. And this was like the mid 80s, so it's kind
of
cool.
That's surprising. I would have thought that Owner of a Lonely Heart might have won for best rock performance or whatever it would have been, best band rock performance. That's a really, really good single. I mean, far departure from what they were doing previously, but I could see how the Grammy voters would reward them for that song. Like, whoa, this is out of sight, man, and you know, number one hit for you.
Groovy.
Maybe that's a little dated there. Those Grammy people are still stuck in the 60s, but that's kind of surprising. This is their only Grammy winning hit. Now, you said you looked up instrumental Grammy winners on Wikipedia. Are they still doing that category even today?
Yeah, I'm sure they are. I didn't look up to today, but I'm sure they still have it.
Okay.
Interesting. Like they just keep adding categories and not really taking any away.
They took some away recently.
Did they?
Much to the chagrin of, I think they got rid of a few, like some jazz categories. Hmm. Kind of upset some people.
Like they got rid of like the best bop single or the
best bop, yeah, the best Zydeco.
Zydeco.
Bluegrass or something. No, seriously though, it was like bluegrass or something they got rid of, and it pissed off a lot of bluegrassers. My last pick is going to be off of the Ferris Bueller's Day Off soundtrack, but I know we were saying no soundtracks. this was a song that was recorded, you know, as a B-side for the English Beat, and John Hughes used it in the movie, so it wasn't exactly written for Ferris Bueller, but you'll all remember this as he's trying to get home before Ed Rooney. This is the final song that you hear in Ferris Bueller, Instrumental March of the Civil Heads by the English Beat.
Nice. I think that works. That qualifies, and we'll have to do our actual soundtrack show sometime. And I hope you enjoyed this. Even though there was no singing, I think it was still very engaging and very fun to listen to for me.
As me as well. I love this show. I love every week, though. Yeah. I say that, and you know I do, and I'm sure you roll your eyes at me, but every week, either like right after we recorded or I hear it later after we posted it to the internet, I always say, man, that was a really great show. It was one of my favorites. Every week I say that.
Yeah, I think, you know, we do keep doing good shows, and yeah, I just hope we can keep spreading the word. We do have a Facebook page, and if you like us, please go there and tell your friends, and yeah, hopefully we can still do it.
How would people find us on Facebook? I don't know.
You would just search 80s Obsesso. It would come up just because the word Obsesso doesn't get used unless I actually stole it from a Devo fan site called Devo Obsesso.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if you knew that. But.
Okay, so it's good to use a word that's not, you know, super obvious, like obsession. So good for you. Good, that's good marketing there that you were thinking about.
Yes.
I'm proud of you there.
Hope we won't get sued by anybody, but yeah, it's easy to find us, so please do like us, and you can even follow us on our blogspot if you're a Gmail member. Go to 80sobsessive.blogspot.com, follow us, and that would also be cool. And we'll be back with College Radio next week, and I hope you join us.
And that was my my pause there, was my instrumental sign-off.
Nice.
Not saying anything.
Cincinnati.